Head to Whole Foods Market to jumpstart your January during our New Year Boosting Event with savings on feel-good favorites store-wide. Save on organic picks, wellness staples, and more all month long.
Are your ulcerative colitis symptoms proving difficult to manage? Tremfya guselkumab can help you manage the cycle of UC symptoms. At 1 year, many patients taking Tremfya achieved clinical remission, and some patients also achieved endoscopic remission. Individual results may vary. Tremfya is a prescription medicine used to treat adults with moderately to severely active ulcerative colitis. Serious allergic reactions and increased risk of infections may occur. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and TB. Tell your doctor if you have an infection, flu-like symptoms, or if you need a vaccine. Ask your doctor if Tremfya can help you manage the cycle of UC symptoms. Call 1-800-526-7736 to learn more or visit TremfyaRadio.com.
The Last Word on Today FM.
And so let's turn to football and let's talk to Will O'Callaghan, who of course is usually in studio with us every Monday, but I believe is snowbound in Offaly, and also Miguel Delaney, chief football writer of The Independent. Is the snow that bad, Will, that you couldn't get into us?
I'm not going to lie, Matt, as the afternoon has gone on, the thaw has got better and I probably could have made it in. But alas, I had made that early decision today and here I am, unfortunately.
That's fair enough. That's very understandable. Miguel, were you at the rain in Anfield yesterday?
I wasn't. I was at the cold in Brighton on Saturday where it did rain and snow. I had something else on yesterday, so I couldn't make it up to Anfield.
Okay, but I'm sure you've seen...
I regretted it with the weather, but I didn't. With the match itself was brilliant.
Wasn't it? Was that a total surprise to you that Manchester United took the game to Liverpool in the way that they did?
Yeah, to be honest. I mean, like, given the build-up, given, I suppose... how the recent results had gone, how performances had gone, how good Liverpool had been. I mean, everything about this match was basically trending towards a pretty comfortable Liverpool win. To be honest, I think I predicted a 5-0 Liverpool win beforehand. But I suppose, like, I mean, from one perspective, there's nothing like being an international laughingstock for a few days as a bit of motivation. And I think that was part of it, as well as the nature of the fixture, as well as the fact, I think, importantly, that Amorim had a few days to actually work on the team, which basically hasn't been the case since he's taken over. And that manifested, or that all manifested on the day.
It did, but how much of it, Will, do you think came down to attitude? And I know there's a lot of people who sort of deride, you know, sort of Roy Keane analysis at times in Sky. That's all about getting stuck and in there but wanting to be seen to win. Whereas in modern football, it's about tactics and it's about technical ability and the rest of it. But when it comes down to it, even Amorim himself seemed to suggest afterwards that it does come down a lot of the time to having the correct attitude and going out to the pitch, that can make up for a lot of other shortcomings.
Yeah, I mean, Amorim and Bruno Fernandes both brought it up after the game. Fernandes said that he never thought there was going to be any issue about the team being motivated for the Liverpool game, where the concern would be, where was that motivation? Maybe at home against Nottingham Forest or against Newcastle, where Manchester were very poor in the first half hour in that game last week, which was huge concern for them coming into the game at Anfield. But they were snapping into tackles early in the game. There were early dispossessions on both Kanate, who was coming back after effectively 3 weeks out and struggled at centre half. They put pressure on Curtis Jones, which meant that he couldn't get comfortable during the game as well. And they just continued to target in a relentless way down the left-hand side of their attacking and the right-hand side of Liverpool's defence throughout the game. So Trent Alexander-Arnold, I'm sure we're going to talk about the poor performance he's put in and the lax pass for the Martinez goal. But continually that was a problem throughout the game, but it was one that Manchester United had targeted, Matt. Onana changed his approach entirely about his kickouts. Usually he goes short. Generally that's been the case throughout the season. He basically put a lot of long balls. I think 55% of them went long and down the left, and only two of his kickouts throughout the game were passed to anyone down the right-hand side. So very clearly they decided Gravenberch and Salah are not going to provide enough protection on that side. And Manchester United were relentless on their pressing on that side, which I must admit I didn't expect when I saw Bruno Fernandes being named over on the left-hand side. I actually thought that Liverpool were going to get a lot of joy on that side, but didn't prove to be the case.
Indeed. So is this a turning point for Manchester United, Miguel, do you think?
Maybe in terms of psychology, in terms of overall results, I think it'd be premature to say that. We saw they beat City earlier in the season, or about a month ago. Now, to be fair, that game did have different dynamics, and City were obviously in the middle of a crisis then, whereas Liverpool are the exact opposite. So I think it's important psychologically, but ultimately, as the players spoke about after the game, issues remain at United, and like that really, a lot of that squad needs to be overhauled. And until that happens, I think United are going to be quite a stop-start team for some while. It is at least encouraging that they could put in a performance like this and shows, as you mentioned, I mean, like with the correct attitude, some of these players can actually function in that system. And you mentioned the Roy Keane point there, and I think you're absolutely right. It's like sometimes, you know, basic psychology like that is almost discounted a bit too readily from football now. But look at the way people like the greatest coaches of the last few years, Guardiola, Klopp, I mean, they all talk about intensity. And that's exactly what Amorim is about with it, like, as well, that we haven't really seen at all from United. Like, they've been so lax in so many games. Compare the way they started yesterday to how they started against Newcastle.
Of course, it puts to bed, Miguel, doesn't it, all this nonsense talk about Manchester United fighting relegation. Now, poor as the players may be, as against the standards of previous sides, they still are of a quality higher than those teams that are fighting relegation. And they'll get the points.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was always a bit, like, to be honest, I wouldn't have indulged it myself. I suppose, like, when you're on a run like that, it's natural to start kind of looking to see how far I can actually go. But just United being United and the players they have, there was always going to be, it was going to come to a stop at some point. And also, again, I mean, I mentioned the Newcastle game there. Pride eventually kicks in as well, no matter the internal issues in a team. But also, a lot of this will actually strengthen Amorim's hand, I think. Especially with the way the last week went and the way he's spoken publicly.
And has he managed to knock a tune out of Garnacho in the performance he gave when he came on as sub, as an example perhaps as well to Marcus Rashford, who didn't make the squad yesterday?
Yeah, and apparently Rashford is sick. So this is the continued line that is obviously coming out at the moment while he continues to be in exile. I mean, again, it shows he can come back in. It shows, you know, two of the players who were coming back in from suspension, they got big performances from as well. So maybe it was a personnel issue against Newcastle to an extent as well, where Ugarte seemed to give them a lot in midfield as well, Matt, when he came in. Obviously, Kobbie Mainoo got through a lot of work in midfield too. And then to Fernandes, who was, you know, refreshed after his suspension as well and missing the two recent games. Maybe that actually helped them out a little bit too. But his management of Garnacho is going to be really, really important, because while Amad Diallo has added a tremendous amount over on the right-hand side, and again, he proves to be such an important hero for them within this game by getting the equaliser, Garnacho has got the capacity, if he brings his work rate up, to become the starter over on the left-hand side. And then he can get back to working as effectively two number 10s behind a forward as he works this system out. I think there's still a remarkably talented player in Garnacho. It was only this time last year that we were marvelling at the overhead kick that he scored at Goodison Park. He's forced himself into, you know, the reckoning with Argentina over the last year as well. There is definitely a player in there if Amorim can keep him motivated. The feeling was that maybe he dropped off his level a little bit, and that Amorim has decided that he's not going to accept anything except for 100% when it comes to application from his players. So I think a very young player and a very talented player, Matt, if you can get a song out of him, he can still prove to be a very important player this season, especially if Rashford is going to continue to be in the cold.
Now, what about Liverpool and Miguel? What about Trent Alexander-Arnold, who is, when he's in form going forward, such a brilliant player to watch, but when he's not switched on, appears to be something of a defensive liability? If there really is an offer from Real Madrid of 20 million quid for him now, rather than letting him go for free at the end of the season, is he that important to Liverpool's title bid to hang on to him? Might they not be better off saying, off you go, boy, let's let Conor Bradley have a go?
He is, to be fair. I mean, it is just one game. All right, fair enough. So I think there are legitimate concerns from the way this game played out, but he's still been so central to the way they play. There's so many games that he basically controls from right back. And I mean, like, one of the reasons Liverpool are where they are is because of how kind of cohesive the entire unit has been, how well it works together, how well it all fits. And to lose a key part of that at this point of the season, at a point where it'd be a bit, hey, even if they were to sell him now and try and get a replacement in January, to do that this quickly is quite hasty. It could imbalance things. And especially suddenly, because like the chemistry of the title race has slightly changed. I mean, they haven't won it yet. I think it would be a highly irrational decision to just give in to Real Madrid like that. To be honest, I haven't had any doubt for a long time that he's going to go. We've said it on the show. I think yesterday was a bit more circumstantial than anything to be concerned about for the season. But it was striking as well how Manchester United, as you've said, they just went from and targeted that area behind them. And I think that also affected his confidence.
Well, do you think should they hang on to him? Because if you were to take a brutal financial decision in relation to it, if you think that he's not essential to winning the title, would you not take 20 million quid for him now rather than letting him go for free in 6 months' time?
I'd have to wonder who can you bring in for 20 million pounds for the rest of the season. Because
but you don't have to. Shan't you put Conor Bradley in there?
Yeah, and then what happens if Conor Bradley gets injured and say Joe Gomez has got an injury profile where he'd be next up at right back, and again, he's injured at the moment, and Gomez is also covering left back where they've got problems currently as well. I don't know if they have the depth. I think if they were well stocked whereby they had Conor Bradley plus, say, one of the young player who potentially could be there, you could force Real Madrid's hand and say, look, we won't sell him for 20, but we'd be willing to part for, say, 30 or 40 million euro at this stage, and you can enjoy him for the second half of the season. I think Liverpool have too many competitions coming up. They'd be better off to let him just run the contract down and leave, especially if there's a feeling within the club that no matter what contract is put in front of him, that he's already made the decision that he's going to Real Madrid. I don't think that 20 million is going to make a huge difference. You'd prefer to have Trent Alexander-Arnold for the rest of the season. Like, I'd agree with Miguel as well. It's easy to focus on what's happened at the weekend, and obviously Roy Keane's comments have got a bit of headlines with the joke about he's probably more likely to go to Tranmere than Real Madrid after the performance that he put in yesterday. But it's only a couple of weeks ago that we were talking about the pass that he plays against West Ham, or some of the way he was spraying the ball around against Tottenham Hotspur 2 weeks ago, where he's just such an asset to their team in the way that they play. I still think he's going to be crucial for the rest of the season. I think Slot was clever enough after the game as well, Matt, to kind of play it down and say, look, that performance from had nothing to do with the speculation around Real Madrid. It's just where Trent Alexander-Arnold has had a bad game.
Okay, do you think, though, Miguel, could this damage Liverpool's morale? Or when you look at it sensibly, like 19 games, won 14, drawn 4, lost only 1. That is title-winning form in any season, isn't it?
Oh yeah, whatever. I think that, I mean, they're tracking for over 90 points at the moment, which is remarkable. Although some of that is actually a product of where football is now and what wealthy clubs can do, but it's still an immense achievement, especially given what, like in Klopp's last season, Liverpool, they were just over the 80 point mark. But again, it's about sustaining it, and that's with all these issues which Slot has handled very well so far. They have the potential to create noise and distraction, especially if, say, there's suddenly a run of fixtures and Arsenal manage to close the gap to something that actually creates a little bit more tension. That's been key to this as well so far. There's always been that cushion, that insulation to Liverpool. But like the next few weeks will be interesting. Arsenal have a tough fixture list, but so do Liverpool, where they've got a lot of away games and as well as this game in hand. And if it can go to like 4 or 6 points, then the dynamic can change. And then sometimes kind of issues like this can start to manifest in different ways. You even have to look at the way Mohamed Salah has seemingly escalated his comments about his own contract situation, going from there's been no offer to now the latest of this is my last year, although said with a little bit of a tone where there was still openness for there for something to change there. The one thing I would say,
should Liverpool use the money that they're going to save on not having Alexander Arnold next year on new contracts, even though they're aging, for Salah and Van Dijk, on the basis that there must still be a couple of good years in both of them?
Well, the issue with Salah is basically its longevity, isn't it? Liverpool are willing to commit a certain amount of money for like, say, 2 years, where you're pretty much guaranteed that he's going to be at that sort of level. But it's about the uncertainty, and they are run in a very kind of, you know, given they base so much on analytics, they're run in a very rational way like that. I have to say, I mean, if you are bringing it down to kind of probability and rationality, I think it's likelier that given his condition that Mohamed Salah continues this form for as long as whatever contract they give him, as it is that Liverpool managed to replace his goals with something as effective. So it does feel like the rational move is to give him the contract. But the one thing I would say with all that is, Slot is actually masterful. You can throw, it sometimes feels like you can throw any sort of question. You can throw the biggest crisis Liverpool could have in the modern game to him. And the way he speaks about it, oh, you kind of think about it at the end and you go, oh, okay, that's fine. He has such a capacity for kind of just managing to absorb these questions and like treat them as if, oh, look, it's no big deal. We'll keep on going. And that has happened so far.
But just one other thing in Liverpool, perhaps, Will. Just how important is Alexis McAllister to the team, keeping him fit?
Yeah, he was their best midfielder by a distance in the game yesterday. I thought Curtis Jones struggled. It maybe felt like it wasn't the right game for him. He seems to be much more of a player who enjoys putting a gloss on things when Liverpool are controlling it, and maybe when Liverpool are dictating the tempo of the game more than they were yesterday. McAllister, again, like he's got that kind of solidity in front of the defence. He's also got that pass where he's able to unlock a team in front of him. And I thought he was really good. I thought Gravenberch was below the level that we've expected of him in some of the bigger games that Liverpool have played in so far this season as well. So it's beyond crucial that they keep him fit. I was a bit surprised that Endo wasn't brought in to maybe add some legs into the midfield. It kind of felt like Slot waited a bit too long on two of the decisions, one being bringing Conor Bradley on for Alexander Arnold, who was clearly struggling, and the other was not making a change in midfield, whether that meant maybe withdrawing one of the forward players and getting Endo onto the pitch, or getting him in as an extra runner into midfield a little bit quicker than he did, because Manchester United had seized control again in the second half of the game. United's midfield, that's probably their best performance, I think, under Amorim, but Liverpool definitely, I think, needed to get Endo's just graft into the team at that point of the game, and I was surprised that Slot didn't make a change a bit earlier.
Now, you said, McGrelly, you've been down to see Brighton against Arsenal on Saturday evening. Arsenal are sort of just what hanging in there, aren't they, on the basis of Liverpool dropping points yesterday. Will this Arsenal team, I know they've only lost twice this year, but they've, or this season, but they've drawn 7 of their 20 league games, and an awful lot of those wins are single goal margins. Are they going to improve, or are they going to yet again be looking at whoever wins the league?
One of my theories at Arsenal now, I think that Arteta became so obsessed with trying to make up the minor gap to Manchester City and kind of looking at these fine margins, which is why he's focused so much on kind of defensive physicality, that it's almost kind of, it started to take a little bit away from what made Arsenal so competitive in the first place, which is basically that they were this brilliant attacking team that could attack you from all angles. That defined basically their first title challenge against City in 2022-23 and then most of last season. And it has meant, I think, that as you get to this season, and to be fair, I know people like to joke about this, but I do think it's true. Arsenal have had a lot of different issues this season that they've managed well. But one of the greater issues is some of these absences have exposed the fact they've basically got far more kind of prime defenders than they do forwards. And it's left them short up front. And it does mean in a lot of games, like the one on Saturday, they almost try to win. If they're missing any of their attackers aren't on form. And to be fair, they started that game with their entire first choice front four. They try to win these games in a minimalist way. So they got 1-0 ahead on Saturday. And they were already time-wasting. There was bookings for time-wasting. And not just on corners, which is part of their approach to kind of create uncertainty. Also, like free kicks further back in the pitch, all of this sort of thing. And so they try and win these games in kind of a minimalist way. And it does mean you can get potentially caught out by these one-off moments like that penalty.
Could it be that Manchester City could now make a charge, Will? They won 4-1 against West Ham. Haaland is coming back into form. Okay, they're 12 points behind Liverpool. But if you go back decades ago, those sort of gaps were not insurmountable. And a team like Manchester City could go on a run.
They could. I mean, look, the title feels a long way away, but the narrative has obviously switched now based on these two games. Again, it seems to have fallen nicely for them to have a West Ham team who've been very accommodating over the last couple of weeks with the chances that they've been giving up, and Leicester the week before, who left chances behind them in front of goal against City. It's 2 wins from 2 after a run of 1 from 14 before that. So now City feel like they're going in the right direction. Again, it seems no surprise the fact that Erling Haaland has now scored as many goals in those two games as he scored in the 13 previously as well. So as City come back to form and they start to play in a more joined up way in their attack, Haaland starts to get his groove back a little bit as well. He looked far more confident than he did in recent weeks. We talked a couple of weeks ago about the fact that he was passing up on the opportunity to shoot against Everton at home particularly. It looked like his confidence had been zapped a little bit. Maybe the goal against Leicester is what he needed to get back into the type of form that he was in earlier on in the season. Again, even before he hit the net at the weekend, I thought he looked dangerous. The runs he was making, the players around him were starting to find him a little bit better. I still think that City structurally have got issues. I mean, we've talked about obviously down their right-hand side, particularly quite a bit during the season. That's obviously not sorted itself just yet. Not going to have Stones back for quite a while. Rodri, if he comes back, it'll just be for the very tail end of the season. So they're still missing crucial players within the setup as well. But from their point of view, at least Savinho has now started to come into a little bit of form. That's going to mean that Jack Grealish is going to stay probably on the fringes of that squad. They could do with Phil Foden getting back into form. But maybe it's purely a legacy thing. But I always think with this Man City team, if it does click and they get back to a point where they can get back running again and they can get their attacking players fit and firing, this is very much a team who can go on a run of form. Their next few fixtures are very accommodating as well. They've got Salford, Brentford and Ipswich coming up over the next 3 weeks or so. And then they've got that crucial run at the end of the Champions League group stage and they face into big games. They need to be in form for that period.
Just one final one I want to throw at you, McGrell, briefly, because I think Wolves and Nottingham Forest could be a game to watch tonight. And of course, if Forest were to win and they've won their last 5 league matches, they'd go level on 40 points with Arsenal, although an inferior goal difference. And is that possible that Forest could maintain this momentum against a Wolves team which is just on goal difference out of the relegation zone?
They've massively overperformed. I think Forest have something like points return of 1.59 per game at the moment, so just under 2 points a game, which is almost like it's close to title form in that way. So they're massively outperforming. For that very reason, it feels unsustainable. But who knows? They have that. To be fair, on the other side of that, they have spent a lot, and as we've seen that in some of the transfer activity last season, it's still massive overperformance. But in that context, this is actually a little bit of an acid test game, because while okay, you can fair enough set up against some of the big teams, and you'll win kind of home games against beatable opposition. Wolves now, especially since the change of manager, away from home is one of those awkward fixtures, especially with the way they set up under Pereira. And this is kind of one of those games where it's almost, despite the fact it almost seems like a modest fixture, it's one of those that tests like whether you can develop that sort of consistency that is actually necessary for really overperforming in that way.
Okay, we leave it there. Thank you very much. Miguel Delaney, chief football writer of The Independent, and Will O'Callaghan, host of the Hurling Pod, from Off the Ball.
The Last Word on Today FM.